Thanks for tuning in to the Drive On podcast, where we're focused on giving hope and strength to the entire military community. Whether you're a veteran, active duty, guard, reserve, or a family member, this podcast will share inspirational stories and resources that are useful to you. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and now let's get on with the show. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Drive On. I'm your host, Scott DeLucio, and today my guest is Elisa Glass. She's a dedicated caregiver to her husband, a 100% disabled veteran, and a remarkable advocate for caregivers and individuals with rare autoimmune diseases. And Elisa's journey is one of resilience, strength, and unwavering dedication to supporting others facing similar challenges. And we'll get to talk about that in just a minute. But first, I want to welcome you to the show, Elisa. I'm really glad to have you here.
Thank you for having me, Scott. I'm really happy to be here. I appreciate it.
Yeah, absolutely. So before we kind of get into the nitty-gritty of what it is that you do and how you're helping other folk, can you share a little bit about your experience as a caregiver to your husband and, you know, some of the maybe unique challenges that you faced in this role and how you're navigating them?
Absolutely. And one of the things that I really am pushing for and why autoimmune disease is in correlation with caregiver is that I had not identified myself as a caregiver. I was just thinking, you know, I'm a spouse. This is what I do. You know, I'm okay with this. I became overwhelmed. The stress was phenomenal because it turns out that you're on call 24/7. It's not like what some people would think, you know, you get the nights off. No. If he suffers from insomnia, so guess what? I'll be suffering from insomnia. So it was very difficult to navigate in the beginning, especially not identifying as one. So sure. What happened to me in 2016, the pressure, the stress of taking care of him. I was a professor at a university. I was running a store. My body gave out. Within 4 days, I was in the emergency room, and it was a 4-month stay. The stress triggered, obviously, this autoimmune response that is rare. Obviously, it's chronic. It's not going anywhere. And that was a difficult time for me. And in the hospital, my body was just like a lump of flesh. I couldn't eat, couldn't swallow. I was paralyzed, and I was in excruciating pain. But luckily, my mind was still functioning. And I really had to think about what was going on in my life, what happened. I was an avid runner. I was really healthy. I was very, you know, things were great. And then this happened. And while I was laying in the bed, ill, I was still concerned about my husband. Is he going to eat? Is he going to walk outside without shoes on? That wheel just keeps going. So I was really fortunate. I had a neuropsychologist who was assigned to me that actually started to help identify who I am, what I was doing, what's going on. My husband was at the hospital every day faithfully. Obviously, that triggered a lot of things in him that we had to address when I came out. But it was a difficult time, but it was a big learning experience for me, for sure.
I can imagine. Yeah. And as you were talking about always being on call, to me kind of resonated with being a parent. You know, when you have a newborn baby at home, yes. You're always on call. I'm not trying to like minimize what you're going through in what I'm saying here, in any way. What I'm trying to say is that, as a parent, you kind of expect that you have a newborn, they're kind of helpless. You need to do everything. You need to feed them. You need to change them. You need to clothe them. You need to keep them warm and safe and happy and healthy and all the things that go into it. That, you know, take them to doctor's appointments. Putting them down to sleep and all the things that go along with it. And you kind of know that going into it because I mean you've never seen a baby get up and just like cook himself breakfast or anything. Like you know what to expect. But in your case, you have an adult who, you know, in theory should be able to take care of himself, but then, you know, something happens and all of a sudden now you're in a place where you do need to do things for him that maybe you didn't have to do before. And that again, to your point, you know, when he has insomnia, you have insomnia. And that I think is the line that kind of triggered the parenting thought, because you never know when kids are going to wake up, you know, in the middle of the night. But you know, that type of thing is hard, especially when you have all these other expectations of you, you know, work and you know, your career, your home life, you know, everything else that you are doing. And if none of those things kind of gets dialed back a bit and you're going 100% at everything, of course you're going to have some sort of burnout at some point, right?
You know, absolutely. And it's so, you know, most people try to correlate. They try to figure out what is it that a caregiver is going through, especially with being a vet. And it's not easy at times to explain, but I do use the issue regarding, you know, children and stuff. And the thing is that you bought into that. You prepared yourself for that. You know this is going to happen. You don't see that coming in a relationship with an adult, your spouse.
Right.
Okay. And yes, there is some behavior that you feel, wow, I'm dealing with someone who may not be his age at this moment. And then there are times when he's there again, and I see the man that I'm in love with and I married, you know, it's like, oh, this is great. And you get excited, you get happy, and then boom, you crash again because something happens. So that is the big major difference, is that, yeah, you're right. You slam into this relationship and it's hurtful. You mourn and you realize you're losing. And it takes a while, if ever, to get where you're going to be and how this relationship changed, you know? So yeah, using the analogy of a child is perfect.
Yeah. And what you just said there too, is a good, another good difference there, because when a new child comes into the world, to celebrate it, that's something that's a positive thing. It's happy. It's a joyful occasion. But like you were saying, you were in a state where you were kind of mourning what once was. There's a period of grief and loss. And, you know, there was maybe hopes and dreams of things that you might have been able to do together or whatever, you know, the lives that you're trying to build together. And a lot of that maybe got changed because of the situation that you found yourselves in. Not to say that it's all bad. I don't want to say that, because, you know, there's obviously still love there, and there's all of that. Right. And so, you know, thank God there is that. Right. But there's also those, the way things were kind of gets
you
lost.
You're mourning.
Yeah. You're mourning.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
and you grieve it. And you grieve it, because when in a way, when you signed on to marry this person, that's part of what you were signing on for, to kind of think, oh, I'll have this for the rest of my life, you know, and you're in having that vision and yeah, you know, we're always going to be able to talk and do this and do that. Then all of a sudden you realize, okay, that's impossible today. I may get lucky tomorrow. And you realize you lose a lot. And it took me a long time to realize that I was in a continuous mode of grieving and mourning. And I had to really work with that, and which brought in a lot of what I thought of mindset therapy in particular, because you just don't think about a lot of things that you go through, you know, because you're thinking, I'm being a good wife or a good husband. I'm here. I'm being supportive. But you forget to support yourself. You forget to remember to love yourself, because you become so giving, you know, and that's what happened.
Yeah, exactly. And there's, you know, the mindset that, you know, you can't pour from an empty cup. If you're not taking care of yourself, then, you know, how are you going to be able to expect that you can take care of somebody else if you're physically, emotionally drained? You do have to take time for yourself. And caring for that person, that loved one, can be emotionally and physically demanding. And in your case, you know, there was that period where you couldn't do any more.
Right.
You were, you know, at that point. How do you mentioned that there was that mental side of things when you were in the hospital, where you were still still on. You're still on duty, if you will.
Right.
And you were still thinking through all of the things that needed to happen or could have happened. How did you manage afterwards all of the stress and demands of caregiving while also taking care of yourself?
Well, I definitely had to get educated on what caregiving was. I became a lot more active trying to find out what are the services for vets. There was so many things to learn. And one of the things I did was join this caregiver program with the VA. And at that time, I was living in New York, and it was in Castle Point. And when I was in the caregiver program, they had a lot of other webinars, to really understand what my role is, what's happening, that grieving is part of the process. There was so much education in there that is not mainstream. And that's difficult because if you don't know where to look, you're not going to get the information. How are you going to know you don't know anything? It just becomes interesting. But that motivated me to learn more, simultaneously learning about a rare autoimmune disease that I had acquired. So I became, I'm now, believe it or not, 100% disabled as well. My body doesn't function like it used to, and I have to be careful of flares. But my mindset is different. I'm very positive. I know I'm in it for the long haul. I'm not sitting here thinking, should I divorce him because, this is a little bit too much. No, it's like, okay, let me figure out how I can deal with this person. Yeah.
Sure. Sure. And that's the right mindset to have because, it's not going to get any better for anybody if you kind of go that direction, the way you were just describing. And, when you bring two people together, they're supposed to be able to help each other out in good times and in the bad times. Mm-hmm. And this just happens to be one of those times where it's unfortunately not ideal. It's difficult. Yeah, exactly.
It was definitely a critical time in our relationship and in my life, my personal personhood, my life was very critical during that time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And so as you were going through this whole process, you were kind of discovering the tools and things that are available to you, programs and all these kind of things, not to add on to your workload, right? Because you had other stuff going on, right? Now you got to go do all this research and find out all this other stuff that's available to help you. And without finding that stuff, now you're just still doing everything all on your own. So what advantages or what benefits were there to some of the programs and stuff that you discovered as help for your husband or even for you?
Absolutely. I will tell you that during my hospital stay and it was so severe, I had to give up my career. So my professorship was gone. I had to close the store. That was gone. So in essence, I kind of lost everything that I worked so hard, to create, which was, of course, my career and things like that. Yeah. So what happened was being a disabled, classified now as a disabled person was never part of my reality, my dreams. And here I am at the same time being a caregiver. Okay. So what I did learn immediately, the first thing I did, people were helping me to go online because at that time I couldn't even move my arms, let alone my fingers. And we were searching about PTSD. We were searching about things and I started getting information and I love putting puzzles together. So in my mind, I'm going, okay, this relates to this, this relates to that. And that's what started happening. And when I found the caregiver program, I told them, I want every course that you deliver. So what else do you do? So they gave me a list of things, aromatherapy, the chiropractor, couples counseling. I got us into everything, the Wounded Warrior program. And I tell you that there was nothing that I did not try and utilize. And a lot of it was absolutely helpful. And more importantly, it was helpful to me. I needed to change my mindset. I was always a very positive, happy-go-lucky person, but I was being hit with a wall that I couldn't understand or identify, let alone. But it also led me to the Elizabeth Dole Foundation. And I became a fellow and I am an alumni now. And there are so many things. There's a mental health framework. There's things that they do. And what I needed to know for me was, how can I utilize this information that I'm not finding? Because it's good to have it, but then what? So I kept saying, now what, now what? So I definitely got involved in things that I knew my husband would do. He's not a people person any longer. So, you know, taking advantage of some of the tickets that Wounded Warrior would send to us. And I kind of picked and choose. He loved food. So anything that dealt with restaurants that they had, I took him, which gave me also the opportunity to do something I love, which was to go out of the house, which he didn't like anymore. So, you know, it's just him and the dog to go hiking. Oh, that was the other thing. I was able to find a program and got him a service dog.
Oh, so great. Yeah.
So part of it is learning to know what's out there, to research, ask questions, and then to utilize it. That's the next part. Not to just leave it there as a one day I'll get to it, you know? So that's how it's been working.
Yeah. And that's a good point because, yeah, you could do all the research and do all the work to find out all this information and what programs and what services are available. But if you're not using it, then it's kind of like you just wasted your time almost. And
exactly.
And so yeah, exactly. Use that information and the benefits that come with it. But also, I think the thing that I kind of took away from what you were just saying there is that even if you are rated or classified as 100% disabled, doesn't mean that you can't do anything.
Right.
Like you still can do something. And I'm not, obviously, I don't know everybody's situation. There may be some people who are.
It's definitely my situation. So you picked that up from me. Absolutely. And you're correct. Everybody is different. And I will share with you, I've met women who had my disease that have subsequently passed away. Mm-hmm. I have not. They're surprised. They don't know what it is. I believe it's love and my mindset. I'm real positive and I have a strong identity and faith in what I'm doing and what this is about. So I have, and I will tell you, for me, I don't always accept the classifications because when I was in the hospital, they told me, you're not going to make it out of here. You're going to die. So immediately, what am I thinking? Oh my goodness, who's going to take care of him? What's going to happen? You know, instead of thinking about myself, so I had to kind of go, wait a minute. And I recognize that, you know, I really believe that they could be wrong. Right. And I chicken scratch because while I was there, I had another flare and lost my ability to speak and to eat. So I was doing what I call the chicken scratch. They would give me a pencil or a pen and I would try to write. And I told them, I'm not dying. And I kept my word, you know, and to this day, they will see me and they're going, oh, my goodness, they're shocked. But I believe that, you know, getting that classification, what wasn't disabled was my mind. So that's the difference. Okay, sure. My mind was still functioning. I was able to research. I'm able to read. I'm able to learn. I'm able to articulate what I'm learning. And that is my story, that I'm able to do that. So I didn't lose those abilities of critical thinking and things like that. So that's my personal saving grace. You know, there's some people who are hit. I don't know if you heard the term medical PTSD.
I'm not familiar with it. No.
Yeah. And it's something that they're discussing a lot. I do a lot of lectures and especially with pharmaceutical companies and this is something that they're tossing around a lot, that getting sick as quick as I did, losing so much, that there is a post-traumatic syndrome attached to it. So they're doing a lot of programs now to help persons like myself. And it's quite interesting to kind of see it. But obviously, for me, I really think that I have been fortunate. And maybe it's because I had the mindset ahead of time that I was going to persevere. I'm going to make it. I had a lot of things to do. I'm not ready. And that's what I also do with my spouse. And during this time, unfortunately, one of my sons got ill, Air Force. And now that was another case. And so when I looked, I'm going, wow, you know, I really need to research this and see how I can help caregivers. And one of the things was to make sure that I got out there with legislation, that I go and speak as much as I did. And the VA at Castle Point was really supportive. They allowed me to create webinars on positivity, direction, and talking about the Elizabeth Dole Foundation. So they were really supportive of my work. And we got to get it out there. And the first thing is that people have to identify as a caregiver. That's your first step, right?
Sure, sure. Yeah, and I want to talk a little bit more about kind of some of the stuff that you do now as an advocate for caregivers and the tips and tools and tricks and everything that you are providing to folks. So maybe we'll just start off with, like, what advice would you give to people who might be navigating similar challenges, as far as being a caregiver, unexpectedly to a spouse or to another loved one, or finds themselves in a situation like you were in, where they unexpectedly got ill.
Right. I tell you, the first thing is, it's really looking at yourself and seeing what you're doing and to look at the definition of caregiver and see if you fit. And if you fit, then research everything that says and talks about caregiving. And the undeniable thing, you must take care of yourself. Believe in those spa days, which is every day, by the way, whether it's 5 minutes or 10 minutes. You take that time out for yourself. I really believe in positive affirmations. I believe in doing things that'll bring color and joy. So I believe in coloring art. I happen to be creative and artistic as well. But I do believe that if you say it often enough, today will be a great day. Today is really going to be a great day. If you really say that often enough, this affirmation, it really does become a great day. Things can go wrong, but your mindset is there. I can handle this. And if I can't handle this, I will learn how to ask for help. Because that's another thing caregivers don't do. We don't ask for help. Think we're imposing. We think we're asking too much. And we have to really evaluate how much we can do. And I've learned when I need time, I got to take it. And I specifically, since I have a chronic disorder, have to make sure I look at the flare-ups and everything else and what's going on. But I tell you, breathing, there's something called power breath, which is really wonderful. And, the VA does give Qigong classes, a lot of things that are free. And then there's also online. And because we both got hit with this 100% disability, there was a financial crisis, right? So YouTube became my best friend because a lot of things on YouTube is free. And so I became the free 99 queen. I said, free is for me. So, you look at these crises that happen and just, try to make it as possible, turn it around, and just go for it, but never forget yourself. You have to be the primary to yourself because who you care giving for can't take care of you. This is obvious.
That's true. And you do have to. Yeah, you do have to take care of yourself because if you're not up to the task, then that other person is going to suffer as well. And that's, absolutely. Looking at any caregiving relationship, you don't look at the person like, oh yeah, well, that we'll worry about that person another day. As a caregiver, and I know I've been in that situation before myself, where you look at the person and it's like, okay, well, that's my purpose. I need to do whatever I can for this person. Right. And you're willing to sacrifice your own, health and well-being and all that stuff because you care so much and you love that person so much and you just want to make sure that they have the best. Right. But they're not going to get the best of you if you're not taking care of yourself.
Exactly.
And so you really do need to do all of those things that you just said. And exactly. I'm glad that you mentioned the YouTube, free, stuff that's available there. And I know you kind of made a joke of it, but, in your case, obviously with two 100% disabled people in the household, financially, things become a little bit more tricky.
Absolutely.
If you're unable to earn the income that you once had before, you're going to have to find some resources that are free or very inexpensive. And, YouTube, you can find information about just about anything on YouTube.
Exactly.
Some of it may not be great information, and so you might have to do a little digging. But
a little bit digging, exactly.
Yeah, you know, but once you find those you know, golden nuggets out there, you get that good information. You start to figure out what resources, what channels on there that you can trust, and you can start following those and get more information from them, and you know, other guidance and feedback and you know, just strategies to navigate what you're going through.
Absolutely.
And I got to imagine that the folks who are in the position that you're in, you know, in a caregiver position, they may feel like, oh, I don't have time to go and research and look through all of these things.
Often.
Right? Mm-hmm. You probably have that as well, right?
Yeah. Well, and I've heard it often. I don't have time to do X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
But that becomes part of what you start learning as well. And this is why, if anyone's a caretaker, for anyone who's in the military, that there's so much that is being given by the VA, but it's not sent to you as a formal announcement. You have to go to them and get it. And obviously it is all free. And the social workers do really great work. You can even get free therapy, you know, to help you to process what your role is, how you can do it. And time management was something that I advocate for, you know, because I will tell you something that I caught myself doing. I would think, oh, I don't have time. But then I realized I was sitting down and I was watching consecutive NCIS. 3 hours may have gone by while I'm trying to cook or do something, but I'm going, wait a minute. And I had to look at that because I was not consciously aware of how I was managing my time. And I had to make it like that in any time of the 24-hour period. Okay. If I'm awakened by him and can't go back to sleep, I find time to do something then, you know, even if it's coloring, anything that's a de-stressor, you know, so definitely.
Yeah.
Time management.
That's a great point that you made as far as the time management goes, because I'm sure even folks just, you know, scrolling through their phones, you know, looking, you know, scrolling through social media or, you know, looking at, you know, whatever it is that they may be doing on their phone, playing games you know, whatever. Your phones can do just about anything. So the sky's the limit as far as what you might be doing.
And you get lost. Time flies.
You do. Time flies. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. You can be sitting there and then, you know, a half hour is gone and you're like, where did that time go? Right. Or more, you know, hopefully not, but you know, it could be even more. But Many you know, hours. Take a look at your phone, and there are and each phone's going to be a little bit different. So I'm not going to say how to do it. You can, you can always look it up and figure this out, but you can look to see how much time you spent on different apps. You know, whether it's Facebook or, you know, other social media or games or things like that. You can look to see how much time you've wasted on those things. And that will give you an indication of where you can start cutting some time out to go do the things that are required, are necessary for you to do, whether it's researching, like you were saying, or things for your own sanity, for, you know, taking some time out for, you know, to paint or to do some artwork or whatever, that type of thing, you got to make time for. But if you're spending all of your time scrolling on your phone, well, you're not going to have time for it.
Right.
So, time management,
definitely time management, there's no doubt. But I will say that, why are they on Instagram? Why are we watching three shows consecutive back to back? It's called distraction. Okay, we're trying to distract ourselves from what's happening. We're on overload and we don't even realize that we're doing this. So my thing has been, well, I tell you what, talking to myself, of course, Lisa, you want to be distracted? Well, let's make music, let's color, let's write when I was able to write. Let's do things that could be productive for me. Okay. And in the beginning, I couldn't take myself for a massage. So I would make sure I find someone, you know, and to drive me for my massage and then bring me back. And I make sure that food was already prepared, that everything was set so that no matter what was said, if I was out of the house, it was already taken care of. because, you know, you have that forethought, right? So I recognized that I had needed a lot of distraction. And I tell you very, the TV was my biggest distraction. There's no doubt, you know? And so that I had to work on. And yeah, I cut a lot of hours out of that and created other stuff. And so, you know, but part of this, how do you recognize that you're doing this? How do you recognize I'm still going to push for therapy? Caregivers need to go in. And you know, like I had mentioned, if you're with the VA, there's a lot that you can get to support yourself. That is free. And at the time is wonderful now because now they will also do it on Zoom. So you can do it from your home. So there's ways that you can find things for yourself to do. In the past, you had to show up. Now they're all about Zoom. The other thing, for people who are caregivers that are not connected to the, let's say the VA, there are still things that you can find to do. There's still so much support. Just go online and start Googling. And once you identify as a caregiver, you will see. Facebook is a great thing. There's communities that people talk and give ideas. They even tell you, you know, they throw out ideas on how to pre-make food. You know, you take one day and cook for the week. I'm not one of those, but, you know, it's amazing the ideas that they come up with to help you get through the day, let alone the week.
Right. And like you said before, a lot of the stuff that is offered that is available is free. And you just need to know where to find it. And, you know, the VA doesn't, like you said, it doesn't just show up at your door and say, here's all the stuff that we have available to you. You might have to do a little digging and a little research, but.
And be proactive. Make that phone call. Keep making the phone call. I left so many messages to one social worker. It was hysterical that when she finally got to me, she goes, I need to tell you, you're the only one that had a voicemail. People said they couldn't get through. But I kept leaving voicemails. I'm like, you're going to call me back and we're going to make this work. And I had to be persistent, you know, and proactive. And I didn't know about this. I didn't know about the world of caregiving. I didn't know about the resources in the VA. So I really felt like a duck out of water. And I had to do a lot of learning and also, strangely enough, build confidence to be proactive and to go get these things. But simultaneously, I must share with you that my respect for the military, for veterans, just grew exponentially. I tell you, and then at the same time, my respect for caregivers and what we are lacking. And I'm going, we got to go out there because our vets need us. They need us. Yeah. But they also need us to be whole, not to do to yourself what happened to me, which was to crash and in the hospital. So that's how it became my passion, and what I do today.
So can you tell us a little bit more about, in addition to like the advocacy work, and you mentioned you do all of that type of stuff. You also wrote a book with affirmations for caregivers, which you talked about a little bit about that as well, about the affirmations. Tell us a little bit more about, you know, kind of everything that you do, but also the book as well.
Yes, well, I Matter was what came out of my work. And it is an affirmation journal and coloring book, but in the back, what makes mine different is that it also teaches you how to make your own affirmations, and it gives you a lot of resources as a caregiving person where you can call and what you can do. And this is work that I did and I put together because it's just not out there. But today, I'm the CEO and president of Myositis and Allied Diseases. And what is that? Well, I am really advocating for the underrepresented who have chronic autoimmune diseases, and that are also considered very rare. So I've become a voice for the voiceless, so to speak. I advocate for medications and drug therapy for clinical studies, and that opened up the door for me to work with many pharmaceutical companies. And it's been interesting. I'm kind of like a favorite speaker, which is exciting. But right now, I've been doing a lot of work with Johnson & Johnson, who it's really interesting how they're doing this stuff. But I have worked with Alexion. I have worked with Octapharma. And what we are trying to do is to make it known what is going on. I happen to be one of their rarest stories because I am a caregiver that broke down and here I am ill. So I still carry both. You will not hear me talk about my disease without talking about caregiving and talking about veterans. That to me, they go hand in hand and it needs to be discussed. So that's what I do a lot of now. And during this, I've compiled a lot of information. This particular book, it's really for the caregivers, whether they're for vets or any other caregiving situation. It can even be children. And how to kind of take care of yourself, to question yourself on a daily basis, to kind of judge where you're at emotionally on that day. And then to get to the point where, you know, you can empower yourself to write your own affirmations that really resonates with you. And there were two that resonated with me when I was going through everything. One was, I got this. I got this. I kept repeating it. And the other was, I matter. I exist. And the Elizabeth Dole Foundation, it really helped me to bring that attention, is that we are here. We may not be seen. We're behind the scenes, but we exist. And I am working towards people understanding who we are, what we go through, and get even more assistance for caregiving. And that's what brought about, okay, the I matter, because that was my affirmation. And, you know, this person, of course, is that was my moment of where I can say I felt free within the confines of a chronic autoimmune disease and being a caregiver. You know, it's just, it was so freeing. That's why you have the person, their hands out. And there is coloring pages, which I love to color. I put loud colors so that is vibrant for me. It helps a visual for me to kind of take me there. And as I mentioned, there's parts in the back for notes and there's resources. But during this time too, really becoming involved with veterans, I went into a business degree in UConn, and I got a business degree for veteran services. And I love it and was more motivated. And I work now with small veteran businesses to succeed. And that's how I got on the board of the Massachusetts Veteran Chambers of Commerce. So everything started to connect. And I'm grateful because a lot of the work is done on Zoom. So I'm not putting so much pressure on the body and taxing out the body. My brain is working fine. So it's my brain, you know, I'm really great at grants. And so there's a lot of things that I got involved with that way. And then at one point, the veterans business, you know, is this a business week. And I wound up writing the jingle that is being used in Massachusetts and probably other places. And I love it. You know, I got to sing it, got to write it. And it was so much fun. And it was used. It's still on the Massachusetts website, obviously. And I also, there was a woman, Lisa DeCharm, who wrote a song. And she wrote a lot about every service. And we got together. And what I did was refine it, redefine it, and we actually made a song out of it. So, and it talks about every branch, not just one branch, because each and every one of them needs to be honored, needs to be respected, needs to be supported, you know, and for me, needs to be loved. You know, I'm a love of love. You know, let's throw love out there. So a lot of that is what happened, and that's how this book came about. And there's two others in the back that I actually got some of my short stories and a poem that I wrote for my husband that I was really surprised when I read the poem, because they said it was so good. They had me go down and I had a reading in White Plains, New York, which is exciting for me. And when I read the poem, some of these people just broke out in tears. And for a moment, I couldn't understand. But I realized that they identified how much they love their spouse, you know, and through all the adversity and the craziness and all this stuff and the loss, that love is still there, you know. And that was one of the things that they also published for me. And that's Homefront. I don't know if you can see it. It's called On the Homefront. So I got some of my work published through two of their platforms, which is exciting. And I have to tell you, all of this came after. Okay, so I wound up with this whole beautiful new life after almost dying. Okay. And right. I like what it is. I love fighting for my veterans. I love fighting for caregivers. I love being an advocate. I love getting the word out there. And like yourself, meeting someone like you, it's like I'm meeting more and more people who are just wanting to help and get out there. And that makes me so excited, you know?
Absolutely. I have that same type of feeling with this show. I mean, this episode is nearing the 400th episode that I've done. So I've met hundreds, literally hundreds of people doing this show that I've talked to. You know, a lot of times I didn't know that person before we started talking on the show. But by the end of the show, by the end of the interview, I feel like I've known this person for so long because they shared so much of their background and their personal history and all that kind of stuff with me. And it's actually kind of cool because you start to develop those relationships and you know, somewhere down the line, you start helping each other out with something. Right. It may not be something that's, you know, immediate need right now, but, you know, 6 months down the line, a year later, remember me? You know, can we work together on this? Yeah. And that's happened plenty of times.
Absolutely.
So that community building is important. And like what you're talking about and what you're doing, you're meeting people, you're getting to know about them, and you're helping people out. And all while not neglecting the caregiving side of things either. You know, and so I mentioned that because there's gonna be people out there who are like, but I'm just so busy. I have to do all this stuff. I'm always constantly doing, right? But that time management thing that you mentioned before, how much time can you free up by not binge watching a show? It makes it so easy now that it's on, you know, Netflix or Hulu or whatever.
Prime,
it
makes it Amazon.
So easy. Yeah, all of that is so easy to just binge watch these things, right? But that eats up a huge chunk of your day. And then you're quickly. Like, where did the day go? And I thought I had more time. Well, you did have more time, but you blew it on doing something else.
So, without knowing, because you're distracting yourself.
Yeah, it's very, very distracting. And then, you know, I've had days like that too, where I've looked around, I'm like, where did the day go? Like, I felt like I just woke up and now it's almost time for bed. And the day just flies by. And
which reminds me, another thing to use is a calendar. I have calendars with me. I walk with it and I try to fit everything in because I don't want to be late anywhere. I'm a caregiver, not a veteran, but I will tell you, I've learned, you know, if you're 15 minutes early, you're 10 minutes late. This is, you used to tell me this all the time. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you know, so I really try to, you know, and manage all of my doctor visits. And I manage it. And how do I manage it? Time management, the calendar, and prioritizing. Sometimes you have to say, wait a minute, I got to get out this house. Okay. I mean, you know, it's sometimes I got to get out the house. Okay.
Yeah, there's no exactly. doubt about it.
I need to decompress. I need to do something of a fun and maybe even frivolous, you know, in order to come back and be ready and re-energize and keep going. And I've heard it all that they don't have time. And one of the things that I also correlated with not having time is that we spend time in being sad. We stay in the mourning. If we keep feeding that and looking at them or get into their psychoses at that time, or you know, like I said, don't even bother if they're going to argue or whatever. Sometimes it's best not to even engage, right? It's to disengage. And, you know, you look at that and you realize I am also wasting time sitting here feeling sorry for this person, feeling sorry for myself, or being angry at some service that is not being given. And you have to look at that, too. And I recognize that, and I'm definitely talking about myself here, that I was spending a lot of time grieving. Not only was I grieving him, I was grieving my own life, you know, and thinking, oh gosh, you know, I worked so all these years and thinking, oh, I got a few years left and then I can retire young and do X, Y, and Z. Didn't happen. It just didn't happen. So there is that grief process that I spent a lot of hours just sitting there, just staying in my head. And I'm going, that's not, it's counterproductive, was not productive for me. And needless to say, started all of these affirmations, you know, staying positive and doing what I need to do. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And getting that mindset right is, I think, just a huge part of it.
In
addition to the time management, but that's also part of the mindset, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you are constantly looking for that distraction, time management's going to be nearly impossible.
Right.
And you're always going to feel like you're just barely keeping your head above
exactly.
the water.
Exactly.
You're going to feel like you're just swamped and you can't make any headway or any progress with anything. And if anything, you may feel like you're even going backwards and
exactly.
not going in the direction that you want. So yeah,
get yourself really amazing. Right. And that's the thing, you know, the mind is amazing and it can just play all these tricks on you. And that's when I also realized too, I needed some therapy and
sure.
I went to the VA. I got some great therapists in there. Then I also had a therapist on the outside that was assigned to me because of my body's state. And that was dealing with what they were calling at that time a medical PTSD for me. So I continued the therapy and I became a little bit more talkative because I didn't talk much. I didn't tell people mm-hmm. everything I was doing, how I may have been overwhelmed. And I wasn't asking. I didn't even ask, you know, and I have siblings and I have adult children. And I didn't even ask, you think you can come over this weekend and you know, do this? Because I felt guilty to sure. want to do that. And I felt it was my responsibility. And then I felt that if I didn't do it or I couldn't do it, that it was a failure on my part. And I really had to look at all of that. And it's not. It's okay to ask for help. It's okay to do these things, you know.
Right.
And I had to process all of that. And I worked really hard on that. And still to this day, you know, I call myself 8 years old because at 2016, I almost died. But I am still working on it. And I listen to so many like yourself, you know, having words of wisdom, you know, and you listen and learn and try to create that space for yourself. You know, you must go on. You don't let your identity get swallowed up and disappeared. You know,
that's right. That's right. And I guess also realizing that you're not alone in any of this, that there are other people out there who
right.
have experienced similar things. Mm-hmm. that they have been there, done that. They've been in the trenches. They know what you're going through. So ask for help and take the advice.
That's why I said,
you know,
support
so,
groups.
Exactly. Is there any place that people can go to kind of get in touch with you if they have questions or they want to find out more about what it is that you do and the advocacy work that you do and that type of stuff?
Absolutely. And I didn't mention it, but in case they are interested, it is on Amazon.
Okay.
Yep. I've been surprised. I've been contacted by social workers who have been buying in bulk to kind of distribute among their clients. So that's been kind of exciting for me as well. I do have by the way, myositis and allied diseases at gmail.com. That is an email. Okay. Myositis allied diseases at gmail.com. And there is a phone number, 603-290-3218. I do get back to everyone in time. There is no question that I find silly. There's no such thing as that. And if there's any way that someone may even want to share information with me, please feel free to send it. I'm all for it. The more we can grow, the better it is to get that word out there.
Exactly. And I'll have this information in the show notes as well. So folks can reach out to you and find out more about what you do and get that information. Also have links to your books in the show notes as well.
Thank you.
So that way folks can grab a copy of the book or several copies if they, you know, in the case of the social workers, like you mentioned, that might want to distribute it out to folks. That could be a thing too. But you know, I think the message that you mentioned earlier, you know, saying repeating to yourself, "I got this." Mm-hmm. I think I think that is a thing that keep telling yourself, eventually you're going to start believing it, and eventually you're going to have it. You know? So that, that to me is a super powerful thing that you could
Exactly.
I think
so.
Before we wrap up this episode, I want to end it with a little bit of humor. I know sometimes the subjects that we cover on the episodes are, you know, a little heavier for some folks. And I always like to, you know, it's almost like having a dessert at the end of a meal. You know,
I love humor.
Hopefully the joke that I tell here is a good one and you can laugh at the joke. But if not, you can always laugh at me and I'm okay with it. As long as you're laughing, I don't care. You could definitely laugh at me, and that's fine. So, anyways, so a new captain becomes a leader of a company of soldiers, and as he goes out, learning everything on how they did do things, he finds that there's two soldiers who are guarding a bench, and he asks the soldiers why they're guarding the bench, and they say that the previous commander ordered them to do it. So he called the previous commander up and. He's asking why he did that. The guy who he called said it's because the previous commander ordered it. So he calls that commander, and that guy's now a lieutenant colonel, asking, why did he order that? And he gets the same answer, that it was ordered by the previous commander. So he goes through this whole song and dance a couple more times before he gets hold of a retired 4-star general, and he calls up the general. And he asks, why did you order the men to guard this bench that all the commanders since have maintained this tradition of having people stand guard at this bench? And the old retired general goes, wait, is that paint still wet?
Sad but true.
You know, it's the one thing I've noticed in business and in when I was in the military, is there's been this mentality with people. This is the way things have always been done. And so that's their reason and their rationale for why is it that you're doing this thing? Well, it's because that's the way it's always been done. And that is a good example of...
I love it.
The way it's always been done. So that's how we're going to do it. Doesn't mean it's right.
That's why we call ourselves an agent of change.
There you go. Yeah. So
and that's it.
I just hope that that captain who took over that company has dismissed those soldiers and let them not guard that bench anymore. Holy crap. Anyways, thank you again for taking the time to come on and sharing your story, sharing your husband's story and the work that you do to help out caregivers and others who are in a similar situation to where you are. Because there is help out there and there's hope for those who maybe are feeling like they're all alone and that they can't get through this on their own. So thank you.
Oh, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening to the Drive On podcast. If you want to support the show, please check out Scott's book, Surviving Sun, on Amazon. All of the sales from that book go directly back into this podcast and work to help veterans in need. You can also follow the Drive On podcast on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, and wherever you listen to podcasts.